What was the ending of this game like for you, just through your eyes, the rally at the end of the fourth and then overtime?
Yeah, it's encouraging. Obviously, you see these guys, talking about my teammates, fight all the way through the end, regardless of what happened. And the play is good, bad. We fought all the way to the end, and that's definitely encouraging. You don't want to be around people that are quitting, that are giving up. That's not the type of guys we have. And so that's encouraging. I think we got better on offense. We've gotten better over these past couple games. I think today was a testament to that, being decisive, receivers and everybody, and things like that. And it's tough. It's a tough loss, just because you get the ball in overtime and you don't go and seal the deal. And I like to pride myself on 2 minutes and things like that. I like to pride myself on being able to, provide efficient drives, and that's not what happened today.
Let's get back to Plumbers 911 Football Monday with Rami Makhlouf on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app. Plumbers 911 Football Mondays are presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and by Busey Bank.
There's Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. I hope that dude's not being too hard on himself. I'm sure he's sleeping right now. I hope he wasn't too hard on himself before he went to bed for that, again, inexcusable sack he took in overtime. And I don't think he is. Caleb Williams seems very, very confident and the type of guy who doesn't let that stuff weigh him down when he makes mistakes like that and can look ahead to the next play and the next game and learn from it and also take the positives out of this one as the Bears fall 30-27 to the Vikings. And what else for the Bears? Heartbreaking fashion at Soldier Field today. 312-644-6767. If you want to get in, shoot me a text, give me a call. And I thought there were positives to take out of this one. Mainly Caleb Williams, 32 of 47, 340 yards, a 103 passer rating, the third best passer rating that any quarterback has had against that Vikings defense so far this year. And now 2 weeks in a row against really good defenses that you saw Caleb Williams produce and this offense as a whole take steps forward. So that is very, very promising to me. The dude has 5 consecutive games now without throwing an interception. And he set the Bears rookie passing yards record today, passing up the great Mitch Trubisky. Remember that legend? Moment of silence. Okay, it's over. 312-644-6767. Let's go out to those phone lines. And Chris from Moline, you're on 670 The Score. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Rami, what's up? Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for making it.
Yeah, so, hey, a couple things I just wanted to point out. I just thought was kind of interesting, kind of funny in the same time. So watching the game, my 15-year-old nephew is saying things like when they went for 2 on that touchdown, you know, the play we're all talking about, he's even sitting there saying, well, why would you go for 2 there? Why wouldn't you just kick it, you know, if you get enough, you need to just be right there. But I think it's funny that, a kid who's not an NFL coach could literally see the situation for what it was and understand, like, hey, like, that's not right, you know, and all of us are saying the same thing. And along with that, like, a couple other points I wanted to make. One thing, too, like, I love everything that Thomas Brown's been doing with the offense. I will say, though, I would like to see a little bit more aggression in the beginning of the game. I don't know if a lot of that in the end, like, had to do with, the Vikings running prevent or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see a little bit more of that in the beginning of the game. But other than that, I have no complaints. I think this guy's done awesome. In the situations, you know, it's unfortunate, but there's definitely that. And then the other thing, too, in the end of the game, with Eberflus, why, like, the Vikings, like, what, they completed, like, what, like, a first and, like, 20 or something like that, like 3rd and 13.
3rd and 13 is the play you're talking about with Nick Mullins. That was when Sam Darnold went down with the ankle injury.
Yeah, and it's just like it's insane to me. And even in the overtime period when the Bears were on deep, like you said it earlier, the Vikings had no issue moving the ball down the field. I mean, you're sitting there wondering, like, why aren't we blitzing? What are we doing here? Like why are we in these same situations? Like, they're playing. I don't know. I don't understand what Eberflus was looking at, but you're sitting there like, what are we doing? Why are we giving them all these easy plays in the end of the game? Like, when, like, the game is on the line, like, we shouldn't have been in the situation in the first place if they just kicked the extra point. But, you know, that's where we are, you know, given what happened. But so frustrating to watch.
Chris, I appreciate the call, man. And yeah, this vaunted Matt Eberflus defense, and I got some numbers that I'll throw at you a little later in the show. Not so vaunted anymore. Not so scary here the last few weeks, and especially in some crucial situations. I can't get over that Nick Mullins to Aaron Jones on 3rd and 13. I can't. That's an absolute backbreaker, man. That was the Bears' best chance all game to sort of take the momentum and flip the game and take control of it right there. Their starting quarterback is sitting on the sideline with an ankle injury. Nick Mullins comes in. It's 3rd and 13. And you let Aaron Jones just run across the middle of the field with not a soul in sight and basically walk for a first down. That's an absolute backbreaker right there. By the way, we'll hear more from Matt Eberflus later in the show. Oh, and Chris said that his 15-year-old son was asking why they were going for two. Opposite end of that spectrum, I was watching the game at my brother's house. My 74-year-old father had fallen asleep on the couch during the game, and he woke up to my clapping on the DJ Moore reception, or the DJ Moore touchdown before the two-point conversion. My 74-year-old father, who's not quite as sharp or as quick as he once was, awoke from a slumber. He had just opened his eyes and was like, why are they going for two? I don't understand. Like, even he saw it after he just woke up on the couch at my brother's house at 74 years old. 15-year-olds, 74-year-olds, and everyone in between is sitting there going, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Text from the 773. No coach worth having would even consider coming in to plug the holes in this bottom of the ocean tragedy. I don't think that's true. I think the Bears could still have, when you look at this roster and the guy who they line up at quarterback every week, I think a lot of coaches in this league would be champing at the bit to coach the Chicago Bears. And not to mention, Ben Johnson did last year. And according to some, it's because he wanted the Bears job a year later. He turned down some jobs and said, I'm going to bow out this offseason. But more times than not, guys aren't turning down NFL head coaching jobs. They worked their whole life for them. There's 32 of them in the entire world. You get offered a head coaching job, and unless there's another one being offered to you at the same exact time, you usually take it. So I don't think the Bears will have a hard time finding qualified candidates to take the head coaching job. Will they hire a qualified candidate? That's another question altogether. Because I immediately question the qualifications of anyone the Bears hire on the basis that the Bears hired them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense? I go, wait, if the Bears wanted that guy, what's wrong with him? What's the problem here?
I always go back to the fact, so the last time the Bears have had a good coach, we can all agree, was Lovie Smith.
Yes.
They, in their next head coaching cycle, they picked Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians, who has worked with multiple, three Super Bowl winning quarterbacks in his illustrious coaching career.
You want me to make you feel a little bit worse?
Make me feel a little bit worse.
Okay.
Why not?
You know who was hired the same year as Matt Eberflus?
Kevin O'Connell,
yeah. And long story short, he's been a lot better. Matt Eberflus, 14-30 overall record in his time as the Bears head coach. 5-18 now in one score games. 5-18 in one score games, by far.
Did you see that graphic on the scoreboard? Since 2022, the Vikings have 22 one-score possession wins, most in the NFL.
I'm getting there.
Oh, I'm getting there. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I stole your thunder.
It's all right. Matt Eberflus, by far the worst of any head coach in the NFL right now in one score games at 5-18. Kevin O'Connell, 28-16 record over 3 years as a head coach, and he's now 23-10 in one score games. That's the best for any coach in the league. That could have been your guy. That could have been your coach.
He has more one score wins, way more one score wins than Matt Eberflus has.
Has wins. Period.
Oh.
You know who else was hired that offseason? Mike McDaniel. who has the Dolphins in position to go to the playoffs, despite not having his starting quarterback for, what was it, four games? When Tua went down with another concussion?
Look how hot they are right now.
Yeah. Those are functioning offenses with smart head coaches who know what to do in crucial game situations. Dave from the Northwest side, you're on 670 The Score. What's up, Dave?
Hey, man, how are you doing today?
I'm all right.
All my life I've been watching football. The Bears are the only team they fire everybody. They fire the head coach, everybody. The Bears are the only team they fire everybody, but we're going to keep the head coach. What are you talking about? See, here's the thing. You have incompetent people at the top, then you're going to have incompetent people
at
hiring. This is simple math. The only reason they kept him is because his job was saved because he was good defensive coordinator. Watch this. That's fine. I'm sorry. Well, you became a defensive coordinator because the people you hired got fired under you, which means who hired these people? You.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now what? All right, so now you're not a head coach now. You're a defensive coordinator, which means that takes away from what you should really be speculating and watching. You're a head coach, not a defensive coordinator. So watch this. I can guarantee you, he will be fired. That's a no-brainer. He will never be a head coach, just like Matt Nagy.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Nagy went away. He's a quarterback coach, just where he came from. Just like this guy, never get a head coach. Watch this. It starts from the top. The reason they have no football smarts as the people they hire. Now, the next coach has to be an offensive coordinator.
We'll see. We'll see, Listen, Dave.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the thing. Here's the most aggravating thing. We're going to run the kicking team out there. Oh, no, we're not. Now we're going to run it back. And watch this. Pick a lane. You should know that this is simple, basic stuff that you should know. I can't wrap my head around it anymore.
Dave, I appreciate the call. Yeah, I can't wrap my head around it either. Again, the most basic of stuff gets screwed up by this team and by this coaching staff.
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on that.
And when he talks about the firing of people and keeping other people, yeah, man, this is a trend. This is a pattern that the Bears follow time and time again. Of hiring coaches and giving them quarterbacks who were drafted by the previous regime, or hiring GMs and giving them coaches that were hired by the previous regime, and like never having the whole organization from the top down on the same page and with the same mission and the same mindset and everybody locked in arms. You know what I mean? That's never the case. And it's not going to be the case again if they fire Matt Eberflus and bring in a new head coach. It's the same thing that they did with Mitch Trubisky and John Fox, and they did with Justin Fields and Matt Nagy. And by the way, he said Matt Nagy will never be head coach again. I'm hearing some buzz that teams are looking at Matt Nagy, given what he's doing in Kansas City right now, that he might be on some head coaching lists.
Have fun.
Yeah, good luck with all that. From the 224, Flus was the tank fall guy coach, needed to install a solid, proven guy to change the mindset to start winning and pair with Caleb. Really comes down to Poles being too nice of a guy to dump Flus to start the year. I don't think he's too nice. I don't think he was just like, oh, well, I really like him. I don't want to fire him. I really, really like him. I don't think he was just being a nice guy. I don't think that's the case. Now, it is possible that we've heard that he wasn't the one who picked Matt Eberflus, that there were people above him or consultants who sort of said, this is going to be your coach, and we're going to hire you to be the GM, and this is going to be your head coach. There are people who think he didn't really have the power to fire him in the offseason. So maybe it's not on Ryan Poles. I don't know, but that would be a sign of organizational dysfunction, that you hired this guy to not let him do his job and pick his head coach. But let's say it is Ryan Poles who made that choice to hire and retain Matt Eberflus and retain him in this previous offseason. Let's say that was his choice. You can defend it. You can defend it. You can defend it by saying, well, look at what they did the second half last year. Look at what that defense did. And the thing that I don't know how many people were like, were really pushing for Ryan, for Matt Eberflus to come back that didn't work for the Bears in the offseason. You know, there weren't a lot of diehard Matt Eberflus people in Bears Nation this past offseason who would have been like heartbroken if you fired the dude. But whoever out there was saying it makes sense to keep him, but more specifically, Ryan Poles, in talking about why they decided to keep Matt Eberflus, he said during one of, I think it was at the Combine, at his press conference at the Combine, that he doesn't understand why people put so much of the losing on Matt Eberflus, given what this organization was going through the last few years. Essentially saying, you couldn't really evaluate the guy, given the situation that he was in. And first of all, you can. Like, there are certain things that you can look at, like, I don't know, what a coach does in crucial game situations when his team doesn't even know what they're supposed to be doing out there on the field. Like, that stuff, that's not stuff where talent is holding a coach back. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, the roster just wasn't good enough for me not to make a dumbass decision. You know what I mean? Like, that's not on the roster. They lost games because of the roster, but they also lost games because of decisions Matt Eberflus made over the last 2 years. So you could make some evaluation, and there could have been some things that raised red flags about the way that this dude was coaching this football team. But I think an even stronger retort to Ryan Poles or anybody else saying, well, how can you evaluate or judge Matt Eberflus in the first 2 years given the circumstances? Well, you had no problem evaluating your quarterback. You had no problem evaluating Justin Fields and deciding he wasn't the guy. And I'm not here to relitigate the Justin Fields versus Caleb Williams great debate of 2024. That's not what I'm here to do. But I'm just saying, how can Ryan Poles or anybody else look me in the eye and say with a straight face, you couldn't evaluate Matt Eberflus on the last 2 years, and at the same time go, yeah, we've seen enough of Justin Fields that we've decided you didn't. Like, either both are true or neither are true. You know what I mean? You didn't put either of those guys in position to succeed and to win games. And quite frankly, Justin Fields did more to win you games the last 2 years than Matt Eberflus did. Yet one of them was still here and one of them was not. One of them got blamed for the losing. One of them did not. One of them was told you weren't good enough to do this job and the other one was not. Were the last 2 years, was that a period where you were able to evaluate people within your organization who might be a part of it in the future, or were they not? Or were you just lying to our face the last 2 years and telling us you were evaluating Justin Fields when really he was just a sacrificial lamb? Like, you can't tell me those two things. Those two things can't be true. That we evaluated Justin Fields and decided to move on, but we couldn't evaluate Matt Eberflus. That's impossible. That's impossible. You cannot, those two things do not line up. I don't have the logic of a five-year-old for you to tell me those two things and I just go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. No, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You either could evaluate people the last 2 years or you couldn't. Text from the 773. I'm not sure what week this is, but I can feel a what the blank am I doing here vibe from the players. On some level, yes. And honestly, I don't know that you can really say that these last 2 weeks necessarily. They've fought and they've competed these last 2 weeks. I don't think you can deny that or take that away from them. Now, Arizona and New England, whew, that looked like a team that had given up and was planning offseason trips to Cabo. That looked bad. I don't think the last 2 weeks, though, there's a what the blank am I doing here vibe from the players. Also from the 773, was it Cairo redeeming himself? This came in during the recap at the start of the show when I said Cairo Santos redeemed himself with the onside kick. Thought that was Torrey Taylor. That's Patrick from Gage Park. Am I mistaken, Tyler? Do you know who the kicker was on the onside? I could have sworn it was Cairo Santos.
I think it was Santos.
Yeah, he even talked about it after the game, yes. Like trying to get the right spin on the ball.
Single-digit number, yeah. So that's Santos.
Okay, all right, good. All right, feel a little better about myself. And Another one from the 773. The existing player's main objective is to stay healthy enough so they can walk out of this hazardous chemical spill of a season. I don't think these guys are to that point yet where they're like checked out. They're making business decisions. Again, it looked like it with New England and Arizona for sure. But these last 2 weeks, man, and especially the offense with the firing of Shane Waldron and the installing of Thomas Brown, I'll be honest with you. While the number on the scoreboard at the end of the game isn't as high, and maybe some of Caleb Williams' counting statistics aren't as high as they were against Carolina and Jacksonville, I'm more impressed and more encouraged by what I've seen from Caleb Williams and this offense the last 2 weeks than I was in those two games, simply because of the competition. Those are two top five defenses. Those are two top five defenses in Green Bay and Minnesota that you came out and put up some legit offensive numbers in. And defenses that get after quarterbacks and cause a lot of problems for them.
I was going to say, you know, the one minus, I think, from the offense today was definitely, I think, the fact that they couldn't run the ball. Caleb Williams being the leading rusher with 6 carries for 33 yards, kind of a problem, but when he was asked to throw the ball, again, I'm not saying throwing a rookie quarterback 40-plus times is a method of winning, hence the Colts game, but he made enough plays to keep this team in the game.
Yeah.
So you have to take away those sort of positives. Again, he's being asked to do too much, which this is the kind of conclusion we've been coming up with early in the season, but now with a new play caller, in your point, Rami, he's picking up the phone more times than not.
Find me a rookie quarterback, and we had the call earlier, Cliff from L.A., and I'm not knocking Cliff, and I'm not saying he's wrong in his take, but we had the caller, Cliff in L.A. earlier, who said he blames Caleb Williams for the sack that he took in overtime, and I'm not here to defend that sack. Terrible decision.
100%.
Inexcusable.
100%.
And a rookie mistake. But find me a rookie quarterback who his team gives up 27 points in regulation, who they botch a punt, who they miss a field goal, who their coaching staff is sending people onto the field who don't belong on the field, and he even gets his team to overtime. You know, you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I don't think, as good as Jaden Daniels has been this year, that the Commanders are in a game where all of that goes wrong. A botched punt, a blocked field goal, the confusion on that play right there, 27 points on the board in regulation. I don't think Jaden Daniels wins that game, or Bo Nix, or any other rookie quarterback that's putting up numbers this year. That they were in that game largely because of Caleb Williams. And then he had that, and then he and in the worst time possible, he has his rookie moment. You know what I mean? But the reason they were in that game is because of the rookie quarterback. And they couldn't overcome his rookie mistake because of all that dumb crap that we just went through. Oh, and the two-point conversion they shouldn't have gone for, which we got another text about that, which says, can we talk about how bad the first two-point try call was? Take the points. Eberflus needs to go.
Oh, 100%. And you said earlier, Rami, that this was going to be a very positive hour because of Caleb.
I got you.
Yeah, Caleb Williams. Well, I wanted to ask you this then, if we're going down that path. What was your favorite Caleb Williams moment from this game? Favorite play?
Favorite moment? I'll give you that and my real positive spin about this game, and not just this game, the last 2 weeks when it comes to this Bears team. That's coming up right after this. That's Tyler Ferengul. He's on the other side of the glass. I'm Rami Makhlouf. I'm on this side of the glass. You're on the phones or in the text box at 312-644-6767. If you want to get in with me and talk some Bears on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank, I'll tell you what's good about these last 2 weeks, and we'll hear from Matt Eberflus if that's something that interests you right after this on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So now second and 12 after that two-yard loss. See where Caleb Williams goes here. Pressure comes. Gets away from Van Ginkle. Still under pressure. Floats it down the sideline. And somehow Swift finds it. DeAndre Swift didn't locate it at first. And then it dropped in his lap at the 11. First down, Chicago.
Here's the thing that Brian Flores was worried about. When you've got it done defensively and you have an opportunity for a big negative play, and he creates something. Look at Andrew Van Ginkle. He is free right to Caleb Williams. Makes him miss. this throw is as good as the one earlier on the drive to Keenan Allen was. That one is outstanding.
I actually misread how many guys were up front. I miscounted how many guys were up front. And so I didn't use DeAndre as my hot route. And then I quickly noticed that 43 was coming free. And, yeah, so after that, just go make a play. I know I had two guys running down the field, clearing it out. So there wasn't going to be much of anybody else over there. Knew they ended up matching DeAndre. And DeAndre went to flat. The backer had his eyes on me. DeAndre made a, no pun intended, but a swift move upfield. And, I triggered it, knowing how much space I had. And just wanted to give him a shot kind of make up for my little mess up right there in the beginning of play.
Let's get back to Plumbers 911 Football Monday with Rami Makhlouf on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app. Plumbers 911 Football Mondays are presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and by Busey Bank.
That's me, and I'm live from the Hyundai Studios. Tyler Farengol is on the other side of the glass. You can get in on the show at 312-644-6767 if you want to call or text the show, and we'll hear from Matt Eberflus in just a matter of minutes. Get very frustrated and angry at the things he has to say after a 30-27 loss to the Vikings in overtime today. Tyler asked me before the break my favorite Caleb moment of the day, and it was not just that throw, but you heard, was that Greg Olsen? Greg Olsen on the call today?
Kevin Kugler and Daryl Moose Johnston.
Oh, that's right. It's Daryl Johnston. You heard him say he referenced the Keenan Allen throw earlier in that drive, which was an absolute dart in a very tight window with the guy who pressured him on the highlight. We just heard Van Ginkle. I mean, he was on it, and if that ball is a split second later or a split second slower, it's an interception. And the reason that that's my favorite Caleb moment of the game, Tyler, I don't know if you have one or if it's the same one, is those two throws show you everything you want to see in a special quarterback, in a play that's drawn up and executed the way that it's supposed to be drawn up and executed, but required the special arm talent of Caleb Williams for it to be executed, for him to get that ball and squeeze it into that tight window. And then in the highlight that we just heard, the throw to DeAndre Swift, the ability to, when a play breaks down and things go wrong, to make something special happen. We saw in those two throws, in those two plays, just about everything that you want to see out of a quarterback and go, oh, there's something there. It's not all figured out yet, but there is something there with that dude. So that those two plays, that sequence right there, that was my favorite Caleb moment of the game. Do you have one?
Yeah, there was, like you said, a lot to like about yes. what he did today. I would say it had to come down in the biggest moment for the Chicago Bears of the game, and it was the missile down the middle of the field for DJ Moore to put them in field goal range.
Yeah.
Because you recover the onside kick right there, holy crap, we have a chance. They're at the 40-yard line with, what, one timeout? So you're trying to think, oh, they're going to go 5-10 yards down the sideline, another play. No, he just rifles that thing right down the middle of the field, right past a couple of Minnesota linebackers, and pretty much square into DJ Moore's chest. Like, yep. It could not have been a better pass. So that right there, I know he took the sack in overtime, but to even get them in that point where we've been referencing, absolutely no gimme that this yep. field goal unit holds up. For him to make that one play to get them in that spot,
Huge moment. You're right. And I said at the beginning of the show that probably the biggest development and silver lining of these last two games, well, three of the last five games, is Caleb Williams has shown you the ability to take the football at the end of a game in the final minutes and go down and get you a score when you need it, whether it's to tie the game or whether it's to take the lead and win the game. He's shown you that he can do that. I remember I talked with Paul Pabst of the Dan Patrick Show just before the season started, and he hosts the Tailgate every Saturday morning right here on 670 The Score, and he's a big Bears fan, and he said, I can't wait. And this is before Caleb Williams took an actual official snap in the NFL. He said, I can't wait for Caleb Williams to get the ball at the end of a game with a chance to win it. And he said, and that excites me because it's the first time I remember ever feeling that way about a Bears quarterback. And at the time I was like, man, that's a big statement. You know, to say that about a rookie quarterback, I can't wait for him to get the ball at the end of a game because I feel that good about the Bears' chances when Caleb Williams has the ball and a chance to win. And now three times he's shown you why Paulie was right when he said that to me right here on the Score. And that is a huge thing. Again, that's not there are certain things about that you can coach or teach into a quarterback, but there's a lot about that in terms of the calm, the cool, the collected mindset that he has to not rush, not get panicked, to be able to execute in those situations is huge for a rookie quarterback. So that's a great point, Tyler. And if you have your favorite Caleb moment of the game or anything else you want to talk about concerning your Chicago Bears, 312-644-6767. Shoot me a text or give me a call. Let's talk some Bears here on Score Overnight on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday. But Tyler, I said this hour would have a very positive vibe, and here's why. And I don't know if I'm alone or in the minority on this, because I don't know if a lot of Bears fans, given the expectations and the hype coming into this season and the hope coming into that they might finally have something competitive, I don't know that a lot of Bears fans are ready to come to this place that I am, to come to this conclusion where I'm at. It's the time of year where losses are a good thing, you guys. It just is. And I know we never wanted to get to that point with this football team, but these last 2 weeks, if there is such a thing as a perfect loss, these have been perfect losses for the Chicago Bears. Tyler looks so confused on the other side of the glass right now. Here's what makes them perfect losses, Tyler. This team is not going to the playoffs. They're not. It's not going to happen. According to the New York Times stats and info section, they had a less than 1% chance to make the playoffs before this game. They're not going to the playoffs.
So long for my preseason prediction.
Thank you. That's a wrap. Kiss the baby, cancel Christmas, whatever expression you want to use. The Bears are not making the playoffs. It's just not going to happen, folks. So here's three things that we should want out of this season right now. One, the development and progression of Caleb Williams. More important than anything. More important than anything within the Bears organization right now is the development and the progression of Caleb Williams. And the last 2 weeks since the firing of Shane Waldron and the installation of Thomas Brown, this game plan looks like it's geared for that. To put this kid in position to succeed and to do some things out there on the football field that are productive, that are going to make him a better quarterback, that are going to increase his confidence, and not just him, but this whole offense. So that's objective number one. Objective number two, make sure they fire Matt Eberflus. Make absolute certain they fire Matt Eberflus. Leave no question, leave no doubt whatsoever in the eyes and minds of Ryan Poles, the McCaskies, and anyone else who's hiding in dark crevices of Hallis Halls and helping with the decision-making over there. Leave no doubt or question whatsoever for anybody within the Bears organization that this guy's got to go. Because one of the things that they pointed to in bringing him back for this year was what they did in the second half last year. That resulted in a losing season and not making the playoffs. They went, yeah, but we won seven games. We won seven games. Look at what the defense did. The Bears need to lose games and need Matt Eberflus to look bad in the process to make sure that they fire him at the end of the season. And what he's done in these last 2 weeks helps that case. Not just the losses, but the way that they've lost helps that case. And third and final objective in these last seven games. And again, I know we didn't want to get to this point. Let's get that draft pick, man. Let's get as close as we can to the top of the NFL draft. And right now, you look at this thing and they sit 12th. And if the season ended today, the Bears would get the 12th pick in the NFL draft. They have 4 wins. There are 3 other teams that have 4 wins. New Orleans, Cincinnati, and Dallas. There is 5 teams that have 3 wins. New England, Carolina, Tennessee, the Jets, and Cleveland. So you have 8 teams that are within 1 game of you, and all of them have easier schedules than what the Bears have. The Bears could legitimately move up into the top 5 of the NFL draft this year. And I know that's not anything that any of us wanted when the season started. And I know it might be a hard realization to come to, given the hopes and expectations that we had coming into this year. But if you can continue the arrow pointing up on Caleb Williams and the offense, continue to expose Matt Eberflus as the joke of an NFL head coach that he is, and get, you know, a draft pick somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 8 in the first round, that's the best possible outcome of these last 7 games, and why these last 2 losses have been what I would call, and what confused Tyler a few minutes ago, perfect losses for the Chicago Bears.
Here's what I'm confused. I'm not trying to say that you're saying they should tank. Are you saying they should tank?
Not intentionally.
Okay.
They should keep trying to win football games and coming up short in doing so.
Okay. I don't think they're doing that on purpose, obviously, but I think your point is valid. But in that case, I think Matt Eberflus, if there's any logical people that are sitting here and having this conversation in the Chicago Bears front office, Matt Eberflus's bed should already be made. It shouldn't matter it shouldn't matter what should happen.
So young, Tyler.
Oh, but you know I'm right.
So naive.
It shouldn't matter what should happen these final 7 games.
You know,
six games.
When, like my girlfriend will watch like true crime documentaries. You know what I mean? And like, you know, people are murdering and robbing and all that stuff. And she'll go, I just don't understand. I just don't understand how somebody could do, how could they do that? And I go, you're thinking with a sane and normal mind. Like you're a normal, well-adjusted, healthy human being. The people who do these things are not normal, healthy, well-adjusted human beings. Tyler, right now, you're using logic. You're using what we call logic and common sense. Those two things, not always what's at work inside of Hallis Hall. There might be a way. I agree with you that there shouldn't be a way, but there might be a way for Matt Eberflus to save his job. And if that exists, I want any of that done away with. I want any thought, notion, inkling of that to be done away with, to be washed away by what we see in these last 7 games. Because the Bears, as an organization, are just dumb enough, incompetent enough, inept enough to find a way to say, no, let's give them another chance. They won 4 games at the end of the year. They'll find a way.
But from an actual like expectation standpoint, right? They're 4-7 right now. I feel like majority of the expectations around this team were, okay, 10 wins might be possible. I think a lot of people were drinking that Kool-Aid, myself included. But again, improvement. 8 wins, 9 wins, that's improvement. Right now, that's not going to happen. We want to see steady improvement, and we did not see steady improvement this year. So therefore, again, does not matter what happens these final 6 games. Maybe they win 1-2 more games.
We'll I hope
see
you're
if
right.
They could.
I hope you're right. What I'm saying is to be safe and to get a draft pick, lose these games. There's nothing to be gained from winning these games. And I want them to lose in just the right fashion, just like they have the last 2 weeks.
I do want to see Caleb Williams pull off a
competitive
thriller drive, though.
Hard fought,
fantastic.
Good offensive performances, and the most important thing, great performances from Caleb Williams. Give me those things in losses, and I'll be as happy as I can be for these last 7 games. I know, man. It's not where we want it to be right now. I understand.
We are at this point of the year where we are really talking about, again, development of Caleb Williams. I want to win games too. Obviously, that's the number one, I guess, priority, but the playoffs are out the window. I want them to win games, but the number one priority now is it's Caleb Williams, keep doing your thing, man.
That's priority one. We're on the same page about that.
Yes.
Priority two, make sure Matt Eberflus gets fired. And priority three, let's go get that draft pick. If you're not going to make the playoffs, get as high up in that draft as you possibly can.
I think we're on the same page with the second priority as well, but I think we both, we're taking different routes.
Sure, yeah. And I'm not saying I want anybody within the organization to make decisions that would lose games. I'm saying, basically what I'm saying is, I want them to continue to be as incompetent as they are.
You just need to find a way to realize that after all this time, Matt Eberflus is what? 14 and 31?
Yes, 14 and 31, yeah.
What are we doing here?
Unbelievable.
We complain how much about Matt Nagy and his inept ways. Matt Nagy had a winning record after 4 years.
I'll be pissed if Matt Eberflus like gets smart in these last 7 weeks and does just enough to save his job and cost the Bears a top 10 draft pick. I really were. I will be pissed.
What we saw today from his defense was regression.
Terrible.
This is what you're supposed to be the best at, and this defense is consistently lagging. I love the acquisition, but where's Montez Sweat been these last several weeks?
Mm-hmm.
He's your second highest paid guy in franchise history. Where has he been? Matt Eberflus, this defense is all on you.
Yeah.
All on you.
If he gets all the credit, he gets all the blame too.
100%.
Absolutely. Speaking of Matt Eberflus, let's hear from the Bears head coach after a 30-27 overtime loss to the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay, just got out of the locker room with the guys in there. You know, obviously very disappointing loss, but also I told the guys how proud I was of all of those guys to stand together, the grit, determination that they had to be able to make that an overtime game. You know, so being able to score those two touchdowns at the end there, put ourselves in position with the onside kick and deliver the strike down the middle to DJ to kick that field goal to tie it. So, you know, a lot of good things there, you know, in terms of that. You know, played a good football team today. Again, give all the credit to Minnesota. They did what it took to win the game. But, again, we don't have a lot of time to talk about the game in terms of the, you know, 96 hours till we play our next game. We'll be in tomorrow. We'll make the corrections and then go forward from there.
No, you
guys will have a walkthrough. We'll work our first and second down tomorrow. Coaches have done the prep already for that. And working into the next Tuesday will be our first, second, third down 2 minute, and then we'll work into our red zone the travel day. So our normal Thursday schedule that we've been using, it's been good for us. And with that, I'll take questions.
Early third quarter, fourth and four, can you explain the confusion that existed in that sequence with the kicking team coming on?
Yeah. You know, we felt good about going for it there. We really did. And that was a green light for us. And I got to do a better job communicating to the field goal team.
Was there some rush in the play? Did you see that Caleb was kind of rushing the play? It looked like he was still trying to get things settled as the play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I think it's just the point where we need to do a better job. I have to do a better job of communicating everything to everybody. And you know, if he was late, then I might have been late. And then he was maybe late getting the call. So, and again, we liked the call there, and we were all set with going for it there.
Were you planning ahead on that on third down at third and nine? I think you were already knowing this is four down.
Yeah, we were planning ahead. It's important that they do that. And again, I had to do a better job of communicating that. I wasn't as clear as I usually am.
Matt, what was the reason for going for two on second
to last? Yeah, so we're down 14 there, and we really like our 2-point play, and we were going to make it a touchdown wins the game, and we felt good in terms of where we were in terms of the game, where how the game flow was going at that point. And we thought that was our best chance to win.
Matt, what was your take on the defense in the overtime? Obviously, you guys had them.
Yeah, the overtime defense was not good enough. You know, we end up getting them third and 10. I got to do a better job there, you know, making the good calls there. And in execution, we got to do a better job. But again, that was not what we wanted. We could win the game right there, you know, on both sides, you know. So we, you know, put ourselves in position there. But end up, you know, getting behind the sticks on offense. But again, punted it away. What a great punt by Torrey. And almost recovered that one. They called him down on that one, particular one. And then we just got to operate better. I have to do a better job, you know, setting the defense up for success.
Do you have some concerns defensively right now with the run defense? And I mean, you guys talk a lot about bend, don't break. But too much bending leads to break.
Yeah, I thought early on, the run D was not where it was, where it needed to be. They popped some runs on us early, but I thought it settled down after that. We did a better job as the game went on. And but again, we got to do a better job, you know, coaching it.
What's your concern? What do you see on the blocked field goal? What's your concern having a third field goal block this season?
Yeah, you know, we got to go back and look at the tape. And we got to look at the kick, the protection, and all those things. And again, the ball was on the 30, I believe. So it's, you know, a good spot for us and Cairo. And again, whenever that happens, two games in a row, we got to make sure we take a hard look in terms of the protection, you know, the technique, you know, and then who we have in there. So it's going to be a big thing to look at today.
How much do you get involved in that? You've talked before about going to the offense when there's a problem there. Is special teams something that you're going to have to get involved in between now and Detroit?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, when you have issues on any part of the team, you got to get involved, and we got to make sure we clean up those things. You know, in D.C., you know, end up, you know, having that muff punt. You know, he was calling poison out, which means get away from it, and then it ended up hitting him first, and then, you know, it's unfortunate, but I love his response. His response was great, you know, him getting that big kick return to put us in position to score.
Now, what did Caleb show you on those two scoring drives to force overtime?
Yeah, this true grit. You know, really, you know, inspiring to the whole football team and just, you know, really good execution. And, you know, he did a really good job of, I thought, all day, you know, because that's, like I said earlier in the week, that's a tough defense to go against with the different looks and, you know, the pressures and a variation of coverage. And I thought he did a really good job of finding the space, as we talked about earlier in the week, you know, and getting the ball to our skill. And he also changed, you know, the speed on the ball that he was throwing. You know, sometimes he threw it in there, a dart, you know, and then sometimes he lobbed it. And, you know, like, for example, the one play that we threw a screen, it was a screen to the side. You know, it was defended first. He held it and then put a little more air on it. It was still a positive play. So those are all things that are just really good quarterbacking. And he's growing, as you know, in front of our eyes. And today was a really good growth for him, to be able to go out there and execute the way he did with a 103 passer rating and be able to get those drives going at the end, you know, to put us in position to win the game.
And in his big picture trajectory, Caleb, what development have you seen the last 2 weeks?
Just really good communication throughout the whole offense. You know, the offensive staff, the player-to-player communication is really good. You know, getting to the right solution during the course of the week, asking great questions from his teammates and also of his coaches to get to the clear answer. And I think that's been outstanding the last couple weeks. And you can see his growth in the last two games.
What do you see as Thomas's effect on that?
Yeah, it's really a collaborative effort. And, you know, Thomas is leading that side, and I think it's really good, you know, in terms of that. You know, I really believe that, you know, Simo and Thomas are working together with the protections and the run game, you know, BD Kerry Joseph, all those guys are working together to come up with a really good answer to be able to put our guys into the space that we need to get them into so they can work. And you saw that today, and we got some good explosives out of it. I mean, some of the catches that, you know, Rome made in traffic, you know, Keenan made in traffic, and then, you know, that big play that, you know, DJ made at the end there. And, you know, so, and again, you know, Swift, you know, continues to do a good job. And, you know, and then Cole. You know, Cole's really, you know, getting involved, and when you involve all those players, all that talent, it's a good product on the field.
Matt, specifically with that big play to DJ to set up the field goal for the offense as a whole, what did you see on that sequence? Obviously, with no timeout.
Yeah, they were playing back a little bit. I know they had three guys back there, you know, and they were playing, you know, more of a looked like more of a sideline deal. But again, the end cut there was open, and a really good job of stepping up and delivering there.
This is the third game you lost on the last play of the game.
Yeah.
How, as a coach, challenging is it to keep talking about culture without having a team that's beginning to go into games expecting something bad to happen in those situations?
Yeah, I don't think we expect things like that to happen. I just believe that we have to execute better down the stretch. We got to coach better down the stretch. It's an everybody thing. And again, is it difficult? Yeah, it is difficult. You know, you lose three games like this. I think it is difficult, but again, you got to be tough. You know, you got to be tough. This league is not going to feel sorry for you, and we got to go and get ready to play Detroit. And that's important that you own everything in front of everybody, in terms of your teammates. And that's important that you do that, and then work to find good solutions. You know, and us, the coaches, got to put them in position, And we got to do a great job of finding the right answers and to execute.
Two more segment of the final drive. First,
that you do that and then work to find good solutions. You know, and us, the coaches, got to put them in position. And we got to do a great job of finding the right answers and to execute.
Two more segment of the final drive, first two plays of those final drives the past 2 weeks. Are you seeing something there that may be an issue, or was it just an execution thing where they're not locked in the play?
Yeah, I would just have to go back and look at it, you know, because, again, it's always an everybody thing. You know, it's route disciplines, it's getting the ball out on time, it's protection, like I always say. So it'll be one of those three things, and we have to take a good look at it.
What happened on the second? What happened on the second overtime? Caleb stood back there forever with the ball. What was the break? What didn't click there?
Yeah, like I said, it's one of three things, right? It's one of three things. It's either route discipline, it's getting the ball out, and it's protection. So I'm going to have to go look at it and see where that is. But I know there was good protection on that. He had plenty of time, so I have to go back and look.
There's Matt Eberflus after the 30-27 loss in overtime to the Vikings today. I got some thoughts on what he said. Tyler, should I get him out now, or we got to hit a break, right?
I think let's do it on the other side.
Okay, we'll hit a quick break on the other side. My reaction and my frustration with Matt Eberflus and some of the things we heard there in that press conference. I know you're frustrated. I know you got some things to get off your chest. Maybe you can't sleep after the Bears find a way to lose again to the Vikings today. We're here for you at 312-644-6767. Tyler Farengel on the other side of the glass. I'm Rami Makhlouf. It's Score Overnights on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank.